from WYPR and PRX, it's Out of the Blocks. I'm Aaron Henkin.
And I'm Wendell Patrick. And on this episode of Out of the Blocks, we have a very special field producer joining us.
My name is Ashley Minner. I'm a community-based visual artist and a member of Baltimore's American Indian community. I'm also working as a folklorist for the Maryland Traditions Program in the Maryland State Arts Council, and I teach in American Studies.
Ashley, talk about what block we're on right now and what your personal connection is to this block.
We're in the 100 block of South Broadway. This is the heart of the American Indian community in Baltimore, the historic heart, where the community first settled following World War II.
And you were a part of that community.
Right. I'm an enrolled member of the Lumbee Tribe of North Carolina, and a lot of people don't realize, but one of the largest American Indian groups in Maryland is made up of Lumbee, who of course aren't indigenous to here, but who moved up to work. And in this block, they founded the Baltimore American Indian Center back in 1968, and there are still some folks living in the neighborhood.
We're going to spend a lot of time this episode in the Baltimore American Indian Center. This block is home to folks from all over the globe, though, as well.
Yeah, this is definitely the most diverse quadrant of the city, Southeast is, and this is one of the most diverse blocks. We have folks from Mexico, throughout Latin America, the Caribbean, Asia, Africa, Eastern Europe, African Americans, still some American Indian holdouts. There's just folks from everywhere coming through here every day.
Well, thank you for being our ambassador to this block, and let's get to it. One city block, everybody's story.
This is 100 South Broadway.
It's a beautiful Sunday afternoon right now. Tell me where you've been this morning and what you've been up to.
Just left my church, South Broadway Baptist Church, and we just got out of church after having a wonderful Holy Ghost experience today.
Say your full name for me.
Linda Cox.
Tell me about your heritage.
Well, we're from the Lumbee Tribe out of North Carolina, and back in the 50s and the 60s when they came to Baltimore looking for work, because back in the day, you could either be a school teacher or a farmer. So anybody that's ever farmed soon realized, I don't want to do this the rest of my life, me being one of them. Some of them went to work at General Motors, which from working on the farm, making a dollar or two a day to making bigger money, it's like, hey, you need to come here. You're sick of the farm? Come on to Baltimore.
Talk to me about Lumbee spirituality, what that spiritual worldview involves.
We believe in God Almighty, the Creator, as people say, but we put a name to it, that it's Jesus, Jesus, Jesus. That's what the majority of us, you have a few that might not, that wasn't raised to go to church, but in my day, you were made to go to church. If you were too sick to go to church on Sunday, you didn't go nowhere the rest of that afternoon. You were confined to your yard.
It's interesting to think about the idea that Jesus Christ wasn't really part of the picture for Native people until Europeans came and brought that view with them. Talk about how you've made it your own.
Well, I was born into it. In my family, it was taught, so it's just a norm for me. And I'm teaching it, as the Bible said, from generation to generation for my children to know and to believe. And if you think about it, we're from an urban population. We never had teepees. We had houses just like everybody else did.
I happen to know that you love to sing. You have a beautiful singing voice. I wonder if you might share a little bit of it with the world out here on the block today.
Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now I'm
her voice, I'm kind of used to it with her singing. And then when you hear other people compliment her on her voice and stuff like that, it makes me listen to it a little bit more.
This is my son, Dean Tonto Cox.
I'm her oldest son.
Tell me your full name.
My name's Dean Tonto Cox.
I came up with Dean. His uncle, Rondell, said, oh, no, name him Tonto. So we went back and forth for a little while. So I finally gave in. So that's how that came about.
Which it actually came from Tonto and the Long Ranger TV show, which I've been asked my whole life, where is the Long Ranger? And I'm still looking for him, so.
So you were named after an American TV character that was a Native American.
Yeah.
Was he actually Native, the actor?
Yeah, he was.
It got me a lot of jokes, but it kind of fits my personality now, I guess, you know? I don't meet too many people with that name, and I used to didn't like it, but now I take pride in it because it stands out like I do. Growing up, I was very culturally aware, but when it came to school, I wouldn't say outcasted, but I was always called different things. Like, I had a lot of problems with people just for me being different. I've been called Chinese. Then as I got older, it developed as me, people thinking that I'm Hispanic. There weren't too many Native Americans in my school, so I had different races of people. I had a lot of different problems getting jumped in school and trying to fit in. So you almost take on like a different type of, I would say culture, but like I started like I listen to rap music. So over the years I've hung with different types of people and not my own race. In North Carolina, where my mom and them's from, you go to Walmart, you go to gas stations, you go to store, and you see Native American people working at these stores. You see them all in their shopping. Up here, it really wasn't like that. So most of the time, people didn't even know what I was. They just assumed. I mean, I've been teased. I wouldn't say it was racist, but it was just people wasn't aware of what I was.
Never be ashamed of who God made you.
We're here on 100 South Broadway, which is just a block up from your church. Tell me what you're standing in for, the building that you're standing in front of right now.
This is the Baltimore American Indian Center, an establishment that was established in the next block where you're talking about my church. That's where it started at, in the back of a Methodist church back then. And my mother, Elizabeth Locklear, was one of the founders of this Baltimore American Indian Center.
Share some of your earliest memories of this place when it was new.
We had a daycare, senior citizens. We had an Indian Health Service that actually we serviced our people. We had the means of servicing our people back in the early days. At present, we are just trying to rebuild, keep it going, keep the doors open, and keeping the culture alive. So right now we're trying to reestablish our culture program, which kind of died away because as the kids got older and became young adults, they had their own families, so that's kind of died. So we're trying to, now with James, we're trying to bring that back to life.
Hi, I'm James Onquo. We're at the Native American Indian Center at our culture kickoff, trying to find out what we need to do to provide activities for the kids to keep everybody coming back. We got a menagerie of people here today. I would probably say about 25 to 30 kids and 15 adults. We're doing some activities right now. We're making candy apples, bracelets. There's one project, they're called God's Eyes, and then we also have a little table that they're making hand drums.
I'm making a spin drum.
A spin drum, beautiful.
Hi, my name is Celeste Swan. Tonight I'm here with my grandson, Gabriel. And I started coming down to the center as about a teenager. I found it a great place to learn about my culture and to meet other Native people. And as I grew up, I got married, and I would bring my children. And now today I'm bringing my grandson. I'm here today to pass on a tradition to my grandchildren.
Is this place the same kind of place today as it was when you were a teenager? How does it change?
No, unfortunately, the center doesn't get the funding that it used to get, unfortunately. While at one time they were able to provide children who needed Christmas presents, and parents who may work or had hard times weren't able to afford to to get them, the center would help with that. And I remember one time, I'm always will be grateful because I've worked for years, but I needed help getting, I needed coats. I was wondering how I was going to get coats for my three kids after I'd gotten divorced. And I got a phone call from someone from the Indian Center telling me to come and bring my kids to come get coats. And it meant a lot. And so I'll always be grateful for that. I'll never forget that.
What you're about to see now is a candy dance. The kids have to dance as long as the music's playing. When the music stops, they can go grab candy from this shawl that's laid down in the middle of the floor. And as you can see, they're very excited, and this is a lot of fun. So wait till you hear the squeals and the giggles and the... Don't push anyone, don't run.
You're on 100 South Broadway. It's Out of the Blocks. One city block, everybody's story.
My name's Jess McPherson. I am Shawnee. I work at the Urban and In-Health Program in Baltimore. So we're here supporting the culture event tonight. Oh, it looks like James is setting up a drum. So probably he'll teach the boys to sing some songs that everybody can get the beat to, everybody can understand the sort of words, and make prayers that way.
All right, so remember now, we're going to follow me. Watch my hand, okay, and watch my stick. You ready? Ready? Come on, let's just try to get a beat here going. Watch my stick, and we all do it at the same time. Getting good. We're getting there. Almost. You gotta watch my stick, not me.
So I guess my story starts with my mother. It's a traditional story that happened to our people. My mother was taken from her mother, put in a boarding school. Her hair cut off, her clothes taken from her, her language stripped. She was beaten if she spoke our language, and she was also raped by the priests of the Catholic schools when she was growing up. So my mother was raised Roman Catholic, raised off the reservation, per se, in a boarding school. So when she finally had my brother and myself, she ended up meeting my stepfather, who joined the military. And instead of raising us on the reservation up in North Dakota, she opted to move us to Europe with him. And so that was where I want to say our journey began. Those are my earliest memories, is being whisked off of the reservation and taken to Germany. Growing up, I always thought, honestly, I thought I was just like a different shade of white. As I got into my teens, that's when I kind of knew I was Native American, and kind of figuring that out. Probably from about 15 on, I always knew I was Native American, but in a colonized sense, because the forefront of who I was the person who was trying to make my way out here in this world. I had a very shaky teenage years. I was actually homeless for a long time. I dropped out of high school. I lived on the streets. I've eaten out of trash cans. I'm not proud of it, but it's made me who I am today. So when I came to Baltimore, I was 18 years old. I came here to prove to my mother and to myself that I could be a better person. So then I started working. Went back to school, got my education. I went to college. Got into aerospace industry, and that's where my story really, in my opinion, my true story begins, is that's because that's when I came here to the Indian Center. I started to look for people to get them some jobs, and truthfully, it was kind of selfish on my part, because the only reason I started that was because instead of the traditional 100 to $200 like finder's fee for getting people jobs, they were offering $500 this time because we really needed people to work. So that was my alternative motive. But when I came here, there was a gentleman here by the name of John Simmemeyer, who was a culture director and the director of the Indian Center at the time. And he was very obliging by allowing me to come in and talking to him and trying to get people work. But it seemed like he noticed something in me that was missing, because the whole time we were here talking and walking through the building, he kept asking me about me enrolling in as a member and coming to the culture class. And honestly, I kept telling him in the beginning, like, you know, John, I really don't need this. I mean, I'm working out in the world. I'm making my way. You know, the center is here for people that need something, and I really don't need anything. He's like, I think you do need something. And finally, he convinced me to come to the culture class on the following Tuesday. So, needless to say, I showed up that Tuesday, didn't know what to expect. So when we sat down in here, I sat in this little table with probably about six children, and we started learning how to sing and learning about our culture. And the funny thing of it all was that I was learning from the children that first class, and for a while afterwards, I would learn more about our culture from our children than I did from the teachers, because they were willing to share with me, and it was just a very humbling experience for me. It finally clicked in my life. I kind of started connecting the dots on who I was inside. I mean, yes, I'm out here in the world, I'm working in a composite technician in the aerospace industry, but that really wasn't defining who I was. I didn't know who I was. I was very lost still. And the children were my light. I was raised Roman Catholic, very strict. I was first communion, I was baptized, all of that. Sunday school, catechism, you name it, I was in it. So as I got older, I kind of pushed away from it, but I was still longing for spiritualism. So for a while there, I started going back to church again, to the Catholic Church, to non-denominational, to my wife, who was Lutheran. I went to her church, and every time I went to church, especially the Catholic Church, it felt like putting an old hat on, but it didn't fill my soul. There was something that was warm in my heart there, but it wasn't filling me, my soul, my being. So it was probably maybe almost a year after starting to come here. I can remember we were sitting in this room here in the front room, and it was John, it was Lewis, and it was Jason. And John and Lewis said that they were going to have a sweat down in North Carolina the following week, and they were wondering if I would like to come. I've been wanting, literally for like 6 months, wanting to ask to come. But the way I was taught was, you, for things like this, you don't ask, you have to be invited. So finally my day came and they invited me, and I packed my things and off to North Carolina we went. And it just felt right, but it never was solidified in concrete until I actually climbed into the lodge. And when we started to sweat and the first prayer starting to be said, and when I really started to break down on the inside and I put my face into the dirt and started to pray, and I knew I finally made that connection. And when I was done with that sweat, I had never felt so full of pride. And I know in like the Catholic religion, pride is a sin, but it felt the right thing at the time. It finally made me want to stand up straight. And before that, I never did. I always was slunking, always trying to hide. And now I wanted to stand up straight and be in the forefront. So that was, I finally felt like I was on my path. And so I've kept along that path. I've kept along learning our ways. I've kept along by being spiritual, praying, sweating when I can. And that's kind of the story of where I'm at today. I've had to take a year off because of our culture. I vowed when my mother passed recently not to dance. So I haven't danced in almost a year, but I'll be dancing next year, and I have my new regalia being made. So I'm going to come out fresh, and I'm going to come out right again, and I'll be back in the circle. But I knew when my mother passed, because she was so proud of me, for becoming the culture director here, So, I knew she wouldn't want me to stop that. So instead of giving everything up for a year, I gave everything but culture class up. When she passed, when I was in Arizona, every day until her funeral, I would go out to a spot. The first day after I got there, I made a circle and I blessed it and I prayed on it. And every day I went back there to pray every morning when the sun was coming up. And the morning of the funeral, I went out and I was dancing in a circle. And it was on 5 days from the time she died till when we had her service. On the fifth day, I had danced that circle so much, I could close my eyes and I could dance that circle and not take a step out of it. And when I was dancing that circle, I can remember that morning I was dancing with my eyes closed. And with my eyes closed, I can remember vividly looking to my left and I could see my mother dancing next to me, and she was in a buckskin and traditional regalia. Right then, even though she was a Catholic, I knew she was home finally. And she finally was happy with who she was. And she was back to being a native again. So, that's another reason why I am especially now more focused in our culture and want to become, not say a culture teacher, because I'm still learning every day. I want to help our people not to forget, and for our children never have to go through what my mother went through, or even what I had to go through, being lost of who I am. All right, guys.
Show me.
There's good. And now if we get everybody to do it at the same time.
You've been listening to Out of the Blocks from the 100 block of South Broadway in Baltimore. Out of the Blocks is an original production of WYPR in partnership with PRX. I'm Aaron Henkin. I produce Out of the Blocks along with Wendell Patrick, who creates an original musical score for each episode. Thank you to Katie Marquette for production assistance, and a special thanks this episode to Ashley Minner, who helped us out as a field producer and liaison to the community on 100 South Broadway. You can check out photo portraits of the people we met on this episode at wypr.org/out of the blocks. And finally, thank you to everyone in this episode who took a leap of faith and shared their stories and their lives. We are going to be back again on this block next episode. We're going to hang out in the parking lot of the 7-Eleven with the guys who line up there every morning looking for day labor jobs.
All of us be out here about 6, 7 in the morning, wait for work.
That's interesting. So, like, dude will roll up with, like, a pickup truck, and he'll just, like, point at a couple guys? Or
Some will say, anybody trying to work, or one of us will say, work. Hey, we'll come over there. We'll talk to him. We'll ask him what type of work he's doing. He'll tell us. And then we'll ask, one of us will ask, how many you want? How many you need? Well, I need about 5 of y'all.
Somebody come over and say, you know what I mean? If anybody wants to work, we go. If we don't, we don't go. We out here suffer like everybody else.
Garland and Marco on the 100 block of South Broadway. Next time on Out of the Blocks. Thanks for listening. Out of the Blocks is produced with grant funding from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and from the Cohen Opportunity Fund, the William G. Baker Jr. Memorial Fund, Sig and Barbara Shapiro, Patricia and Mark Joseph, Jonathan Melnick, the Andy and Sana Brooks Family Foundation, the Hofberger Foundation, Associated Jewish Charities, the John J. Lighty Foundation, the Kenneth S. Batty Charitable Trust, and the MuseWeb Foundation.
Support for this podcast comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
From PRX.